Crossing Tahiti off his itinerary, Gauguin heads instead for points north in his gambit to ditch civilization. The more his mind has lulled in the tropics, the more convinced he's become that the languorous heat, syrupy voyeurism, and ornate adzes will merely reiterate Parisian clamor and clutter, sans the solace of steaming coffee and pound. Greenland, now that promises true primitivism. Shifting ice tetrahedra, shuddering rumbles, and turns glancing landings will translate, now two or more exactly, than gaudy mangoes. At Saint-Hélier, I'm told that's a big art store in Paris, he stocks up on paint. First the Blanc, de Troyes, de Lunaire, de Ceruse, d'Argent, Crème, Ivoire. They're all shades of white. And then some rouge and marron, and even in case there's some verity to the name, Vert Malachite. He procures wool skeins and the least imposing harpoon he can find. Arrives tremulous in the port of Nuuk, a long-haired French bohemian in a cowboy chapeau. For months he's scrutinized salt form from his table's edges, model clumps and ice glares he built to apprentice himself. Still, the real ones nearly blind him. Blinking and muttering profanities, he catches laughter from sources he can't tie a line to. All this numbness, and yet these sting. From children, the three-pronged bombardment, stares, jeers, and a single snowball, phases him only till his eyes return. He imagines there are critics from the Sorbonne and doffs his hat with a contemptuous flourish. Dinner with the governor. In awe of the plushness of the quarters with which they provided him, he struts his title of painter in residence. The commissions will surely start rolling in. Any day now. He writes as much to Met, to whom he is still betrothed, making sure to include a special note to Aileen, his favorite daughter, his maman's namesake. One day he intercepts whispers about a meat market. When he inquires, his hand is made a map by calloused fingers, but at the appointed hour, parting the beads, he finds naught but putrid piles of fish. He purchases one so as not to offend and wonders if he can render paint from their oil, the metallic glow like souls still hovering around their corpses. It's not too hard to find revelers to gamble with under midnight sun. What impressionists could do with this light, what Vincent would do with it. This long hair, he thinks, must go. It freezes stiff like his brushes, and commissions too have frozen, leaving his strokes brusque and scattered. One morning he decides he's a shiverist, an offshoot of pointillists. But by afternoon he retracts it, too derivative of Seurat and his damn dots. Which to learn, Danish, Norse, or one of the Inuit tongues? Wavering, he makes sentences from slats of each and is permutatively misunderstood. Regaling the locals with stories of his time in Copenhagen, he never knows they've pegged him as a Danish spy. Behind his back, Gauguin. Nauseated by niceties, he trades his lavish room for a turf hut, lean, gray, away from the center of town. The light is relentless, it finds him, harasses him, and yet he can't cease thinking of dark skin buried under textile strata. A centimeter's exposure here is the purest coquetry. Nuuk has too much of the waft of Copenhagen. He must find the prelapse area in the primordial. This hunger and a kayak bring him to craggy Kangek, 12 kilometers distant, the gouverne of the late Aaron von Kangek, a painter and Inuit master, he decides. He makes it his business to see some congecks. Mon Dieu, is that walrus attacking the nude woman, or is it performing cunnilingus on her? Is the man at her side attempting rescue or cheering both on? Returning to Nuuk, he will allow himself to be tutored by this Tupilak, will in short order produce his own Manao Tupupau. And count on me to read a story with lots of French and Inuit in it. Good choice. Which will shock Paris more, the girl whose nubility he makes no attempt to obscure, or the hooded walrus looking on, big death longing for little death? Missing his bidet, he nonetheless learns to crap with gusto and hitch up his trousers with native dexterity and aplomb. Nightly he falls skin to skin with one or another non-met, some as young as Aileen, though the numbers aren't spoken. It is the layers of heat, also without number, from outer to innermost, that he most wants to capture and paint, and where he feels acutest failure. Other failures, those as husband and father, are only temporary, he reminds himself. One day, he will reunite with them. Darkness gradually usurps all. He works in the hut, but dreams an igloo of Sistine proportions, alighting on a ladder like Michelangelo to fresco the underbelly of snow. Disoriented when he awakens, he staggers outside. The moon and stars collude in faint illumination. His blanc have ceded to various shades of dim. He should have brought gris, but it will take half a year to arrive now from across the ocean. To think months ago he shunned light, hid from it. The pictures of Met and children that he's propped up around the room, along with his own paintings, often he cannot make them out. Still he paints, and paints, and paints, and carves, and canvases line the room. The little dreamer, the man with the axe, the sprawling, where do we come from, what are we, where are we going? He surveys this last from right to left, an infant in a fur-tufted amounty. At center canvas, the tree of life, its trunk an upthrust seal, with an Eve who reaches for an apple bitten as yet only by frost. And across the left, he's captured three afterlives. Agneriar tarfik lush with berries and caribou, Nokumyat for the lazy hunter sentenced to a diet of butterflies, and lastly, Algalermyat, where the seasons barter their features back and forth. It is, he knows, a masterpiece. He decides carvings will not be his legacy. Into heat, he burns some, burns others to work by. Glowing warm, clear crystals to lithen his brushes, he knows with certainty he stumbled on paradise. Puking blood, he fancies himself Viking warrior rather than syphilitic artist. Over a century later, museumed, his works make spectators unpleasantly cold. Some say, we should go someplace warm. Starbucks? Tahiti. Into his creeping glacier series, fronds of South Pacific green keep slipping, like shards from a neighboring universe. And this, plus the nipples and pubes he barely conceals under walrus hide, yield countless hours of talk for critics and prudes. Thank you.